The reason I retired is I was burning out. I was tired of working with legislators who talked out of both sides of their mouth. I was tired of petty arguments that occurred among academians. And if you want to know about war in an organizational setting, just go be a part of a university. I mean, the bigger the university, the bigger the fights. And the littler the rewards, the bigger the fights. So I really got really tired of that. And my mother had been living with me for several years and had just died. So I had some decisions to make. I knew I could not go on in the role I was playing then, or I was going to just absolutely go crazy. And one day, I was going through some information in the Chronicle of Higher Education, and I saw a little blurb about the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. Now, I had started my education in Berkeley and immediately flunked out because I came from a very large high school, but I wasn't prepared to be in a freshman class with over 6,000 people. And I thought, you know, that might be a good idea to go back and, you know, complete that circle. So that's what I did.
GTU?
Go ahead.
But you were at GTU, you said?
Yeah, GTU, on the Hill. And I loved every minute of it. I used the libraries, and I just, it was 1 year. My dog and I and GTU, it was just...
What does GTU stand for?
Graduate Theological Union. Yeah. Oh.
And how old were you at that time?
At that time, I was 66. And then I had, during that year, I had to do some contemplation about where do you go from here. You know, you cannot stay in this little sanctuary forever. I'd like to have gone for my MDiv, but I knew very well that God did not intend me to be ordained, that there must be some other things out there for me. So after classes with the Jesuits, with the Franciscans, with the Episcopalians, with all the others, I decided it was time for me to leave that little sanctuary, that little oasis of love and warmth and education, and went to Denver where my son was living. While I was there, I worked with hospice and worked primarily in Wheaton at the hospital there. I learned that snow was not a good thing for me. And I had lived in Florida before, as I said. And so I was blessed. God has blessed me so much, even in the hard times. I've been able to see where, you know, I was being blessed even when I was being punished. And I had the choice of where I wanted to live. And a lot of people don't have that. Mm-hmm. And so I recognize that as a really great blessing. I went to Ormond Beach because I had been charter member of the church there when I had lived there. All right, one day I'm sitting in the pew on Sunday morning. I've been doing all kinds of volunteer work in the town and in the hospice programs again. Was very, very busy. Pastor Kistler was preaching that Sunday, and I'm sitting there, and I love Pastor Kistler. I had met him on several occasions. He's a very vibrant, lively, passionate kind of person. He started talking about Haiti. And I swear it is as if the Holy Spirit smacked me up the side of the head and said, look, why do you think you've had all this education? You know, yeah, they speak French in Haiti. You've had French. That was one of my majors. They need somebody to organize your, one of your degrees is in management organization. You like to travel. You really understand other cultures. I had worked with the Department of Defense for a while in Okinawa, the Philippines, and Japan. as well as living in Turkey and Greece and some of the other places in the military. So culture shock was no longer applicable in my life. And that's how I got started in Haiti. So I said, all right, I will go once. God, it's once. It's just once. I've got things to do here. So I went once, and it was for a week. And during that week, it was a countdown. I would say to myself, 6 more days and I can go home. 5 more days and I can go home. 2 more days and I can go home. Tomorrow we're going home. And I climbed on the plane, and I was very glad to be on that plane and get back to Miami.
So this week was pre-earthquake.
That was pre-earthquake. Yeah, this was 2001.
Pre or post 9/11?
It was post 9/11. Yeah, and they were going to cancel the trip because of 9/11. And I just told the Bob Baer, who was conducting the trip, taking us there, you know, we can live in fear all our lives. You know, we can sit in our houses and cry about it. But if we're really going to live, we need to go. And so I just told him, I'm a tough old broad, let's do it. So we did. We went. And we got back home. And then I went a second time. And then I realized I was really committed to Haiti when they had stamped my passport about 55 times.
Oh, wow.
I decided that, you know, that was where I needed to be. Now, what compelled me to be there? I think I felt in Haiti the love of God in a way I had never felt before. He walks with the Haitians. He's there. They believe. They walk with him. You see on these brightly colored tap-taps, which are common transportation sources, buses, God is love. God protects us. All kinds of sayings of saints, everything else. So that's how I kind of fell into all that. But now I've come to a point where I'm doing some discerning again. I think my purpose in Haiti was organizational. We started out with this group of pastors from everywhere, different ideas, different ways of communing, different ways of thinking about church, different ways, different theology, and gradually brought them into a fold where it is now one church, 14 congregations, and they are solid. So now I'm discerning again, where do I go from here? So that's why I think Renee suggested this kind of forum so that we could all talk about it. So with that, I'd like to open it up to any questions or concerns or anything. You know, in the Bible it says about old wineskins. Yeah. And I believe very much what Bonhoeffer has had to say, that we all have something to contribute. And I also believe we all have something to contribute every single day. It may be a little thing, it may be a big thing. But just by being people of God, we have something to contribute. Now, just to elaborate a little bit on that, while you're thinking how you're going to engage in this. I have a 90-year-old friend in Ormond Beach that I take to church every Sunday. And one of the things I learned about her as I go to pick her up from the retirement center is that they love her because she has a smile. Mm-hmm. And one woman walked up to me as I went to get Mary and said, you know, one of the things about Mary that has made life better for me is that I know no matter how depressed I am, no matter how badly I physically feel, I can find Mary, and Mary's got a smile for me. And so Mary is making, it's a little thing for Mary, but it's a big thing for those who receive this smile. So let's talk a little bit. What are your concerns about retirement, or what are your joys? Some of you are, how many of you are already retired? Great. You're thinking about retirement. Okay. For those of you who are retired, what are some of the joys that you find in retirement?
I enjoy the freedom of time to be there to help people. You know, right now it's great need in my family that need, you know, care, that needs help. My husband has found great joy. Well, when he was getting ready to retire, I knew he needed something to do. For me to help him do. And they were organizing Habitat for Humanity in our community. And I said, I think this is something you might like. And so 19 years ago, he got involved with Habitat for Humanity, and he's kind of at leadership, although he doesn't like to think that, of the 20th house, you know. And he's learned building skills. But now he's going to have to do some discerning because his body is, getting to the point where he can't work that rigorously. And, you know. But we have to have something that we feel is fulfilling.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right, somebody else. No joy in retirement?
Yes. Lots of joy.
Well, I was surprised by some of the things that showed up. I've been retired about 5 years. But one of the things that, and it was things that I didn't expect to be given. I said when I quit that I would not sign up for anything for the first year. But then, even before I quit, I was given a chance to be on the ELCA Church Council, which has gone on for 6 years and has been. But one of the problems, I think, is because some of the things I've been given have had almost work-like characteristics as far as both what I've gotten out of it and what has to go into it. And now as some of those things are starting to come to an end, it's kind of like this is the real retirement.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of what the first retirement things I did. Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing that there's all these different layers, kind of like for Keith, you know, that you do certain things and then you have to adjust again. And you have to adjust again.
Yeah, and it's kind of the same thing with me. Having time was really, really great. And being able to dictate to myself how I was going to spend that time. But when I got involved with Haiti, it was 40 and 50 hours a week. And much as you have said there, it has been like another job. It's just been an unpaid job. And always scrounging for, you know, budgeting in a way that out of my the personal budget I could find money to go to Haiti, because all the work we've done there has been volunteer. Anyone else? How about, go ahead.
Well, I'm not retired yet. I'm working as a nurse and have, and I've enjoyed nursing, but I find myself thinking when I retire, I don't want anything to do with nursing. And I'm a little shocked. Is it pretty common to turn your back on?
Burnout.
Burnout. Burnout. It's pretty
common. No, and that's why I went to seminary. I wanted something so far from academia as I knew it, so that I could spend some time thinking about other things and spending some time kind of away from all the prevarications, where, you know, I could get with a group of people who knew the truth in the Lord.
I've been acquainted with a number of people that were very much in the mechanical, mathematics, scientific world, and when they have retired from that, they've gone to the theater, the Art Institute, just, you know, really opposite. Oh, they're loving it.
Yeah, I retired in 02?
Three.
03. Thank you. I have my memory. pharmaceutical engineering. By the time I'd been there 27 years, I wanted to get away. I didn't want anything to do with chemical engineering. And one thing I did is signed up for voice lessons. That was took 5 years of voice lessons and found out how I can sing.
How I can't sing.
You know? how good I can sing or not. And also, so that was a great pleasure. That was just a complete change. And one of the joys, of course, of being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. Mm-hmm. Having time. Like we decided to come to Holden when we, this year, we've come often. But we decided kind of late and said, look, we just have to schedule it and then we'll plan around it. Let everything fall in place around that. Volunteering. We have fairly recently gotten involved in some food bank work in Alameda.
Mm-hmm.
And
Alameda, California.
California, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure you know where that is.
I know Alameda.
Yeah. we're kind of disorganized, I think. And that's okay.
Enjoy being
sorry. Yeah. Maxine, I think you had something to say.
You do? Well, I do have something to say. I'm going to be 87 in a couple of weeks, and I've worked almost all my life, mm-hmm. and I grew up during the Depression also, but I didn't work quite as young as you because I came from a large family,
uh-huh.
My older brothers had to do more than I did for a long time, but I did start working while I was in junior high, and I guess worked all my life. I'm not as well educated as probably a lot of you. However, I've had a lot of life and living
a lot of wisdom,
and I've owned beauty salons and run them. That was my main vocation, and came out to Oregon in 49 after mm-hmm. the war, and went in back into the beauty business and had a couple of shops in Portland, Oregon, and worked hard at that. I mean, it's a hard way to make good money.
Oh, yes, it is.
It really was, but I loved it. I loved the work, and so I continued to do that until my husband, who is a few years older than I, wanted to retire, and we came to the coast. And so after a few years of just being a coastal person and loving it, and mm-hmm. kind of, I just felt like I just need to do something. And so we opened our home because we had a large home and had a nice view of the ocean. We opened a bed and breakfast.
And
my husband was a great help to me because he was not a big talker, but he could sit at the table and entertain the people if they asked him things about the coast. He was a great mm-hmm. hunter, a great fisherman, and a really great guy. And I could do the busy stuff, and I didn't have to be. My time didn't. So we did that, and he passed away in 95. And we were gone because we didn't run the business in the winter. We decided we needed to travel and do things. So we had pretty nice. Mm-hmm. And so then after he died, I still had the bed and breakfast for a few years. But then I had three grandchildren, my youngest, that needed better care than they were getting from their parents, and the parents were separated, and so I really, for a few years, raised them, and so I closed the bed and breakfast. And then I still wanted to do something, so I bought a little restaurant across the street from my My husband always said, no, don't go into the restaurant because I love to cook. So,
that's called slowing down.
Yeah. So then, anyway, that was hard work. It was just a breakfast, lunch one, but it was a lot of work,
mm-hmm.
but I loved it. So I got an opportunity to sell it. So then I bought a little beauty salon,
And I hired a couple people. Well, you don't hire anymore. They come to work for you, and
yeah.
they pay for their stations and things. So
yeah.
I really didn't have a lot of management and worrying about taxes and things. And until my fingers froze up,
yeah.
and the Lord said, you can't do that work anymore. So I sold it. And then I'm just not comfortable not doing anything.
Yeah.
And so that's why I came here, because... So, and then, I had about 3 years ago, I had back problems and I had a sciatica problem.
Mm.
And for over 2.5 years, I couldn't, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I couldn't walk even. And so I did, you know, because I'm always been healthy. I play golf a lot, and when I had to give all that up, I just thought my life was kind of over. But I'm a fighter, and so I tried to get medical help. And had lots of shots, and nothing seemed to help. And then a year ago, about this time, I went down with pneumonia, and I do have asthma. And they brought me back to life. But I don't know who spoke to me, but someone, when I was in the hospital, told me that I was getting oxygen because of my pneumonia and things, but I needed more oxygen. And my granddaughter was standing there, and she was... The nurse was evidently in the room. I was sort of out of it. And then this voice kept telling me I needed more oxygen. And so I asked who that was. And nobody was in the room. Betty said, nobody's here. And so she asked the nurse, is there some mechanical thing? But nothing was happening. So finally I said, could I get more oxygen? And so then they called in and I got put in the mask and all that. And I think I was sort of gone and came back.
Came back.
So then I went into, they wouldn't let me out of the hospital for a while, so I went into a rehab center, which I thought, oh man, this is the end for me. He brought me back. Why didn't he just let me go? Because I really am not afraid of death or anything. I lived a long time and I've had a great life. But anyway, he did. So there has to be a reason I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rehab was wonderful because they made me exercise a little bit. And exercise has brought me back to where I again can play golf. I've been visiting friends, some of them older and lots of them younger, that are sort of incapacitated by their own will, I think. Because
mm-hmm.
I think you have to move.
Mm-hmm.
And so during this year, with my exercising, I do it religiously. For about an hour, I can now do things that I haven't been able to do in a long time.
Yeah.
So now I'm looking for something, like maybe going in as a senior to homes that somebody needs to be taken care of maybe during the day,
mm-hmm.
and entertaining them, because I have friends that are very, very wealthy, and they wanted to live in their own home. And so I go, they're in Portland, and I'm at the coast, so it's a drive for me. So they want me to come in and see them. And here they have help 7 days a week, 3 or 4 hours a day. And I go there, and they're just laying in there.
Yeah.
He in his chair and she on the couch. They don't get them up to do anything. I want them to move around. And I think I can help people. I can play cards with them. I can fix their lunches. I can
mm-hmm.
take them for a walk to pick them. I think I could do that.
Yeah.
I think you could too.
We know you could, Maxine. Yeah, and I think, you know, Maxine has pointed out, you know, there are several stages
mm-hmm.
in this retirement mm-hmm. process. When you first retire, you know, making that break, I always made it a policy. I worked in several universities as a vice president or a professor, and I always made it a policy that when I left that place, I left it. I didn't go back and mess around with the politics in the place. I left it. And so for me, it's been very clear stages of life. And for me, that has worked really well. For others, that probably, you know, is not the way to go. But I think, you know, what you're saying is that you got to keep on keeping on.
And I've learned that through my life, you know, I've jumped into opportunities that have presented themselves that I really wasn't trained to do, or but I've learned so much, and I've learned that I've never learned something in one place that God hasn't provided an opportunity
right.
for me to use that ability, and then you start learning more on that, and you just kind of go on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I retired from heating and air conditioning on commercial work.
And your name?
Daniel.
Okay, Daniel.
I'm a tolerant. I'm not from Minnesota, but I'm from Illinois.
No.
I'm a tolerant in Minnesota. Anyway, I took up piano lessons before I retired, just for my own enjoyment. And that wasn't the case, however, when I retired. I wanted to continue to be able to play what I was playing and then continue to grow because I wanted to learn new stuff. But if I learned the new material and the old material, I would forget it if I didn't keep practicing it. So I just decided one time I'd go to a nursing home because there it was, you got a captive audience. They're not going to throw anything at you, they're not going to chase you out, and they're not going to run after you either. So I was really nervous. I'd be on the piano, my hands would be shaking because they were all out there ready to do those things. But I finally worked through it, and my own fears that I had to work through.
Mm-hmm.
It was difficult at first, but a number of them, I'll never forget a lady who was 99 at the time, she wanted me to play at her birthday party.
Hey.
She was 100. Uh-huh. So I did, and she took pictures and she sent them to me and wrote a letter and everything. She's passed away since. That's another thing you were saying. If I'm not afraid of death anymore. I used to be. That's why I wouldn't want to go into a nursing home because they're just on the last stage a lot of them. But they do get up and exercise a lot too. Right? They don't dance to my music or anything, but they. But it was quite a treat to do that. I never thought I would be doing that now. The Holy Spirit has led me to do this, and I enjoy doing it. And I like about piano is that I play it. I don't have to work it. I play it. And as I'm playing, I'm having fun. And they're having fun. And I have to address this, too. I heard Bill's story about when he was hitting the drum. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah.
And he didn't think he was any good at it, you know, because they were out there kind of dancing. They were going like this and shaking their heads and like they were not liking it, you know. So he thought, oh, I'm not any good. And that's what I was thinking when I was playing the piano, because my mother was a perfectionist at the piano. She was always good. And I had to be like her, of course. And I make a little mistake here, and they're not going to like it, you know. So, but after I get done, you know, they'd always say, thank you for playing it. And then they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And that encouragement, giving and receiving, kept me coming back, and then knowing that I'm blessed.
Right.
He put on a little concert at the B&B, and you were there.
Oh.
He is good.
Yeah, that whole business of hidden talent is something that has fascinated me, because I think God has gifted us in many, many, many ways, each person. And you talked about fear.
Oh.
I believe that we don't really understand all our gifts because we're afraid. Now, I'm afraid to do that. I'm afraid of public opinion. I'm afraid of what my kids will say. My daughter has learned to. She lives with me now. She was in Katrina and lost everything, so she came home to Mom, and it has been just glorious. It has been really good. But she's learned that, you know, there's sometimes I get very depressed, and she'll come in and she'll say, okay, get moving here. No fear. Just get yourself moving, because it's going to be all right. God's around. She's an Episcopalian, a charismatic Episcopalian, so it's pretty lively around my house. Yes.
My name is Linda, and I'm a teacher when I'm not here. So I feel like I practice retirement every summer. But at the beginning, I'm so tired from teaching, I like just want to relax for a while. And then I have a big garden and things like that. I keep myself busy. I bike. I kind of get my exercise. And partway through the summer, I probably would do some volunteering. But by the end of the summer, I'm like getting useless. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing anything. And I wonder how that is. I mean, I know that my summer's almost over, so I can get just kind of lazy and not do anything. And I just wonder what it's like when you're actually retired, how you, like, sounds like you guys just keep finding things you want to do and participating, but I don't know.
I enjoy being useless.
Behaviorally disabled children a lot of the time, which was real challenging. And I ended up with second graders at the end of my career. But when I left, I never went back. I just was real burned out of it, and I just wanted to be finished with it. And I'm glad I did that. Some of my friends went back and retired. It was like they couldn't let go. But I let it go, and I just, for the first time, have time to spend time with my grandchildren. And I, if I don't want to get up in the morning, I don't have to get up. I'm kind of like you. If I want to be useless, I can be useless. And I have friends who are real driven about still wanting to be really, really productive in their life. And I just want to do things that I never had time to do in my life. So maybe I'll get tired of that after a while. But right now I'm having a really good time.
Yeah. You know, many of you have read, anyway, those of you who are my age, remember Peter Marshall and his wife, Catherine Marshall. And in her book, she says that during this very serious illness that she had, that she felt that that was probably one of the most productive times, that her relationship with God really grew during that time, because although she was ill, there were a lot of pressures that were longer on her shoulders. And, you know, she could be with God in a different kind of way. I think retirement can do that for us if we learn to take that free time and just say, God, I thank you for, you know, giving me this time and this ability to just relax and be with you. Yes.
I retired a few years ago, and a friend of mine gave me this lesson that was quite wonderful, which is that the Spanish word for retirement, even though there is a word retiro, that means to retreat. But to retire is jubilarse. It's to celebrate.
To celebrate.
And that wound up kind of shaping some of my desires in retirement quite a bit, because for whatever reason, whether it's my religious upbringing or whatever, I think not only did a lot of my value come from doing things and being useful and so on, but I also would sometimes, the pursuit of happiness was somehow bad, you know, and...
Oh, that's Scandinavian.
No, this is not Scandinavian. This has got all kinds of other ethnic backgrounds. there's plenty of universality to it. And so using that lens, I also, like Anne, was pretty committed, partially because of lots of advice I received that you'll just keep doing what you've been doing but you won't get paid, was to take a year of doing nothing. You know, and the first thing we did the day after the party, my husband and I got in the car and we meandered. We went on a meander. We didn't go on a trip. We meandered to California. It took us a whole month. Just kind of want to go this way or that way and stop and see Mackie and, you know, stop and have visits with people and visited that sort of leisure sense. But it took a year in which remembering some of the calls of my life that I had to not pay attention to because of the demands of family or location or life circumstance. I really believe that God sort of rolls out your call in the circumstances of your life. But to now have a lot of choice allowed me to remember times when I felt like I wish I could, or if I could only spend a little more time or whatever. And in that discernment, there was a little girl in Guatemala who was selling chiclets. And during the Holy Week festivities in Quetzaltenango. And her name was Christina, which was the same as my oldest daughter. And we just made this heart connection in which she gave me a smile that still, it was like 15 years later, came back to invite me to go to Guatemala. It was very clear that was the first thing I wanted to do when I completed my year. And I didn't know what all that meant, but I found a way to volunteer with street kids, and I'm now getting quite involved in that ministry. And I have to say, in terms of pursuit of happiness, using that as a screen, I don't think there's any time now in the year that I am happier. I mean, just plain old happy, exhausted, bitten by fleas, you know, sometimes kicked, sometimes, you know, whatever, then I'm happier than when I'm in Guatemala.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and I think some of it is this, the threads of your life where you're being prepared for something.
Mm-hmm.
When I first got down there, my Spanish was limited, and I figured, what am I going to do? I'll work in the kitchen. I became a classroom assistant, and it was everything I learned in kindergarten was absolutely pertinent to life in the second grade classroom. And I found myself not even knowing where things were coming from, but okay, now we're going to do the hokey pokey. And so, and actually feeling that I had something to offer, which I could hardly believe because of a lot of my cross-cultural training and so on, really not feeling that as an introvert I could do something. And so somehow this new screen of happiness.
Celebration.
It's wonderful to have more room to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's with grandchildren or something is going to another country or hanging out with even some of the things I did, I had time to be with someone dying in my family who would have been alone, and it was so satisfying that I had that time.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I would have sent him a card and my affection. So it's a new screen that's lively and very useful.
For those of you who have not yet retired, what are your wondering about? What are you thinking about?
Yes.
I might just say something because I'm in the gray zone. I just retired 6 days ago. I came here to sit at your feet and listen. Really. But I think as you get close, I'm 68 and a half, and I retired from 43 years of being a physician, 36 years in oncology. And when I left my staff last week, you know, everybody congratulated me, and I didn't feel like I wanted to be congratulated because it was really mixed for me. I'm not burned out. I just realized that I told my wife, I don't want to live in Minnesota. You know what I'm talking about, when I don't want to be like Brett Favre. I want to be
Richard fans.
I wanted to quit while I was still throwing touchdowns, not interceptions. And but in medicine, it's hard to perceive yourself when you've had a lot of experience and people value that. It's hard to perceive when it's time to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I quit voluntarily with real mixed feelings because I had a life where it's not depressing work. I got a lot back, and I made I had days where I made differences in people's lives that some people don't get in a lifetime, day after day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to miss that, that I could give that much. And I've done some reading, and one of the things that's interesting, and I don't know what's going to happen in the future in our nation, but I think we all have to realize that retirement's a relatively recent concept.
Oh, yes.
In the 1950s. It didn't exist before then.
Mm-hmm.
It began to exist with a union movement and retirement plans. And I see us entering a phase where I'm not sure how long this is going to last. For the population, we're already seeing when the economy gets tough, people are working longer already. And when we were kids, people who couldn't work anymore because they're too tired or lost their skills lived with their families. Who knows what's going to happen? But the average American right now who retires has $53,000 in the bank, and that's not enough. We all know that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are finding that out and having to go back to work. I think that Social Security is going to give them a lot more than it really is. And that kind of stuff. Anyway, yeah. I the other thing that I certainly relate to what Diane is saying. I'm anxious to wake up in the morning and not be worrying about people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go out seeking happiness because I've been pretty happy, very happy. I've been blessed with 45 years of a marriage that, despite her T-shirt, but I.
It says my next husband will be normal.
I keep telling her if she wears that around very much, she'll be looking for her next husband. But I, I'm haunted a little bit by the fact that I had a lot of energy. I have a lot of, health. I've been a runner for 31 years. I kind of want to stay engaged, but I want to have some free time too.
Mm-hmm.
But our pastor, and who's doing our Bible study this week, has said that in the Greek, the opposite of faith is not doubt; it's self-centeredness.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to resist that to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
I have no intention of going fishing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go fishing some.
Yeah.
And I think there's that tension right now. I'm not sure where that's going to land me, but it's been very interesting to hear your stories.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I retired as a teacher too 5 years ago, but I worked in a small Catholic school, about 280 kids, and I wasn't ready. I mean, my husband had been retired a couple of years, and we wanted to do things together, so I retired. But I go back and I substitute teach only at that school. And it's a way for me to be back with the kids, which I love,
mm-hmm.
Not have all the work that I had before, and have the freedom to do things when we want to do them. And so I don't know, as a physician, whether you can do that kind of a thing.
You can. I'm not going to have any patient care, but I want to go to our conferences. I want to go to my national meetings. The science is just getting good. We have to quit.
Yeah.
Her brother has a steady girlfriend, I guess, who's a retired ER physician, and now she volunteers a couple days a week at a free community
clinic.
San Francisco.
Yeah. Right.
Where there's some need.
Yeah.
And Bob is so valuable up here, too.
I'm going to do, I've talked to Raphael about Haiti a little bit.
Excellent.
And I've been in the third world some, and we know what that's like. And I don't know.
Well, what hit me off what you said was you're not burned out. And I think that's exceptional for an oncologist. My son is an oncologist. And
It's hard work.
Mm-hmm. And yes.
I always tell my partners in medicine, we make our money the old-fashioned way, we earn it. We're not, but is that right? But you know, there's a difference between being burned out and tired.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Burned out, I think you're just emptied out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite a ways from being emptied out. I'm just... You know, just age. I used to put in 80-hour weeks and not bat an eye. And I couldn't begin to do that anymore. I'm just tired, but not burned out.
So I've seen that you have a secret about not getting burned out. And, my son's in his 40s. And I think he's a little worried about that once in a while.
Yeah.
And what's your secret? That's a rhetorical question. But to express that to your fellow oncologists.
Part of the problem is oncology has gotten a lot more complicated in about the last 10, 15 years. He's entering an age when, in practice, where things are a lot more complicated. I mean, you've got an electronic medical record. You've got to be an IT expert to practice medicine. Now, there's no paper anywhere. I didn't grow up with that stuff. And that's stressful. When I went into practice, there was one drug for breast cancer. Now there's about 20 good ones. And you've got to know how to handle all that stuff. And so the learning curve, the information coming at you is a lot more stressful than I had in the first half of my career. There's that. Plus, I think the other key for me has been has been my faith life. I saw my patients as not diseases, but people with diseases, and I really went out of my way to get to know them as people, and mm-hmm. got a lot back from looking at people that way.
Yeah.
And acting out my faith in the office.
Yeah, and I think that that whole idea of the learning curve, although we do know that some people experience dementia, my mother did when she lived with me. Of course, my daughter would say, yeah, that makes sense, Mom. But for the most part, I think we are capable of learning more than we give ourselves credit for as we get to a certain age. I grew up without a telephone until I was about 10, 11 years old. Didn't see a television until I was in my early 20s. And so my daughter has now forced me into the 21st century with the Nook and a cell phone. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I think we have to keep learning. Mm-hmm.
And somebody not only said that, we only used the telecall long distance if it was an emergency.
That's right.
So somebody said we were born when we had to get up from the sofa and walk all the way across the
room. Yeah.
In the snow.
Uphill. Yes.
4 miles.
Can
I go back to, I don't know your name. You talked about there's a term, I don't know what language.
Oh, you did not say?
Yeah. In some cultures, though, there isn't a word for retirement.
That's
it
right.
doesn't exist. People don't retire. And it's a privilege to be able to do that in our culture, and to when you guys are talking about being productive, it's like after you retire, you can give a gift of choosing what you want to do with your passions or whatever, but to continue that gift to the world, I guess, is a great thing.
Wanda, what are you thinking about in terms of retirement? Yeah, what are the questions that you have or thoughts that you have around that?
I think I just came to listen from people's wisdom, the incredible amount of experiences here. But not only, and this has been an enlightenment, you know, moment for me. It's not what you are looking for in a future, but also how you live your life every day mm-hmm. in your professions that you can draw in your retirement from that wealth of experiences that you already have, whether it be from your expertise, from your philosophy of life, from your approach to faith, and draw from that and say, well, that has brought me thus far, and where do I go from here? But these are incredible stories. I have been humbled by your experiences. This is holy ground.
Yeah, this is holy ground. Yes.
I'm not retired. I guess on Saturday I'll be 66 years old, so I've been thinking about retirement. Mm-hmm. If anyone's noticed, I walk around the village with my 16-year-old daughter, so she's heading into her junior year in high school, so I'm not quite ready to figure out retirement yet until I get her through college. But I'm kind of gathering thoughts. I went to the creative writing session the other day, and she asked for us to write something at the end about one of the topics was, what season are you in? And I ended up... My season was the season to gather. And I talked about how I'm trying to gather these thoughts and ideas and parts of my life and just trying to get it in front of me so I can begin to deal with that, to understand it, to really make some use out of my past as I head into my future, however that may be. It might be for me, it might be for my daughter, it could be for anyone. Mm-hmm. And someone mentioned earlier, and it really kind of is one of the perplexing things, and it maybe picks up on what Juana says about how we use our past. I kind of think that, and maybe it's true about oncologists as well, it's interesting to know what you'll be like without your job. I mean, who you would be without your... I'm a lawyer, practicing law, let's say. I'm a practicing lawyer. Practice is the operative word there, because we're always learning. And I've done that for 40-some years, and I don't know what I'll be like, who I'll be like, what I'll be without being a practicing.
That's your identity.
My identity. And to get rid of that identity, I'm kind of hopeful I'll get rid of that identity so I can put myself in a whole other place to carry on what, you know, may be important or is important to me at that point. All the calls, you mentioned the calls of your life that you missed along the way. You know, the call to go to seminary, the call to go there, you know, whatever. And the other thing about a 16-year-old daughter is they really break down your fears. I mean, she breaks down her own fears. So I take great courage from seeing what young people do. And so I'm just blessed to be around someone who's constantly, you know, going beyond, you know, going to the next thing without fear, just taking it on, getting in front, singing those solos, you know, up in front of a packed auditorium. I mean, playing soccer, you know, and just, you know, challenging themselves to go further. So I don't want to go into retirement thinking I'm just set, you know, doing what I've done. Yeah. It's a matter, I think, of extending your life through these challenges that I'm learning from all of you or people are doing in their daily lives.
Yes.
Well, I'm talking about life, not retirement. I see kids, how they progress from babyhood, you know, and always going on. And that's the same thing with old age. We just keep learning and slipping to the next stage.
Slipping is right.
One wonderful book that I used for a book group and then both Bob and I have read is Joan Chittister's The Gift of Years.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a wonderful book because I think it really is based on that whole idea that this is a new stage with new lessons to learn. And it's just very readable. It's got, I don't know how many topics in it. Would you say 30, 40 topics? And each is self-contained, so you can just dip into it. And it's, I noticed, I don't think they have copies of it at the bookstore, but it was really helpful because you just look at it, and it actually ends with talking about the ultimate letting go, dying.
Yeah.
And what is your role at the time when you are leaving, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really wonderful book.
Mm-hmm.
The author is Joan
Chittister, Chittister. Chittister.
Just a comment I wanted to make. It reminded me of something I've learned in these years when you're talking about your daughter and how she inspires and challenges you. Something that I've learned, if I think about my immediate neighborhood, my neighbors, where there are, it's certainly mixed, but there are a number of retired people who spend a tremendous amount of time talking about traveling and where they've gone and where they're going, and it's a certain kind of travel. And I find myself kind of itchy or something in those conversations. And one of the things that's very related to coming to Holden that I've sort of learned is important is to put myself intentionally into settings where, whether or not it's with younger people or whether it's with people like Maxine, you know, people who are so alive and considering and questioning and not finished and open, I feel like I have to be a little more deliberate now than I once did when I was working and I had all those professional associations and problems and whatever.
Yeah.
I have to be more intentional about finding a community that will challenge and inspire me and encourage me in the way that your daughter does. You know, that's been something I've had to be more deliberate about in order to ensure that
the comfortable
gets uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think in your workplace, very often you find yourself having to be with negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the joys for me has been just that I can seek out positive people to keep myself positive. And when I begin to get a little depressed, if I find someone who is positive in their life and uplifting, then I can be uplifted. And I just find that such a great blessing. I try not to live too much looking in the rearview mirror. But when I do look in that rearview mirror, I try not to look at all the problems that were back there, all the sorrows, all the trauma, all the ache, but to try and find those high points, those mountaintop experiences. And I think, with this group, it's absolutely incredible, what your lives have been like and will continue to be like. Now, before we close here, are there other things that you would like to share, bits of wisdom that will help us all along our journeys? Yes.
No wisdom, but our friends and sometimes family find an interesting travel thing in Mary's in my life. We've been privileged to do a lot of international travel. And about a year ago, anticipating our 50th wedding anniversary in 2012, she said, "What do you think we ought to do for our 50th wedding anniversary?" And I said, "Well, right now I don't know, but give me a week to think about it." Subsequently, I came and I said, for our 50th wedding anniversary, let's revisit all 50 states of the United States.
Yes.
So we are in the process. And while my family, all 10 of us, are here this week, Mary and I flew to Seattle on the 2nd of June, rented a car, and made a swoop across Washington, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, and Oregon. So we had 5 more states. But, you talk about the intentionality. Mm-hmm. And many of the things that we have done and enjoyed that way, other people just shake their head. Mm-hmm. But those are the kind of things that I think give a whole day a lot of spice to life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, I'm a retired pastor, and I'm listed as assisting clergy on 3 congregations, 2 Lutheran and 1 Episcopalian.
Anyone else have something they would like to share before we close?
Well, we're here at Holden, and we obviously are, I'm pretty sure almost everybody here is financially greatly blessed.
Oh, yes.
Getting here is not cheap. Staying here is not cheap and free. And retiring and doing what you want is pretty much of a rarity, even in this country, not to mention the whole world. And I try to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. We are a blessed group of people.
Yeah.
You had something.
Yeah, one of the things I learned a few years back was a saying that says, "Growing old is mandatory, growing up is optional."
That's right.
And, it's like, I just seem to find a lot of things to enjoy and look for those things.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it involves hard work, and sometimes it's just outright play, but it all becomes play to me.
Well, I thank you all for sharing.
Yes.
And I just want to leave you with the thought that we're all on this wonderful journey. And we know that at the end of the journey, we have a great friend waiting for us. And I think it has always been God's intention that we live a full life, a full, rich life. Again, Bonhoeffer believes, I think as you all know, that a full life has to be within community. And I see you all as so having so much to give to others. So can I ask us to please close in prayer? Father in heaven, we thank you for bringing us together here so that we can share. And I pray that you will help each of us learn to enjoy this life that you have given us. For we are indeed blessed among all those on this earth. We ask you, Lord, to use us to your service in any way that you see fit. All this we pray in Jesus' name.
Amen. And thank you. Thank you.
Thank you
so much.